The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
My next guest is an author, journalist, broadcaster, podcaster, events host. She's appearing in the Dalkey Book Festival. She's going to be hosting two of the events at the Dalkey Book Festival, which is on June 12th through 15th. She was also voted sexiest voice in Britain at one point, which I think by extension makes her the possessor of the world's sexiest Wicklow accent. Mariella Frostrup, good morning.
Yeah, I think, you know, to be honest, I think I was only one third of the UK's sexiest voice. So it's a sort of shared honour, if you will. So it means that there's a flavour of Wicklow in there, but not the full thing.
Who were the other two thirds, do you recall?
I think it might have been Judi Dench and Honor Blackman, I think. It was some years ago. Now, obviously, it's for my, you know, facial beauty that I'm constantly lauded, not.
It is, vocally speaking, that's good company to be in.
Indeed. Well, listen, do you know what? Any sort of speaking, it's good company to be in. I mean, cocktails would be nice with those two.
The Wicklow bit, then, I wouldn't have thought most people would. It's definitely not an immediately identifiable chunk of Wicklow. I don't get Enniskerry.
Well, that's lucky because I wasn't living in Enniskerry. But Kilmacanig, yes, for a good portion of my youth. And then Dublin and Connemara as well. So a sort of all-Ireland accent, apart from I didn't stray into the six counties at that time. But I guess I've lived here for so long now that the old accent gets rounded. It's terrible, actually, because when I come back to Dublin, which I do frequently, or Ireland, indeed, I sound like I'm imitating people's accents rather than actually, you know, having one of my own. And I think having a sort of amorphous accent means that you do sound like a mimic a lot of the time because you're so easily influenced.
Well, isn't this the thing that Sandy Toksvig said? That Sandy Toksvig's accent, the same thing, is an entirely learned, received pronunciation British accent because she doesn't naturally sound that way.
Well, she's just copying me, Sandy. not true, but I do think there's also something about, you know, because also I'm half Scandinavian and Sandy, of course, originates in Denmark. And there is something about the sort of Scandinavian spoken English, which is an incredibly pure form. I mean, it's so mortifying. You go to Norway and I try, you know, with my rudimentary Norwegian to kind of go, can I get a coffee, please? And they speak back to me like they're at the very least a sort of equerry to the King Charles. And you think, how did that happen? And in fact, that's not fair because it's not even a sort of posh English accent. It's just a perfect one. So I think, to be quite honest, I think I'm just very lucky. You know, I had the sort of Scandinavian rigorous approach to speaking English, and I had the Irish loquacious and all-embracing kind of approach to speaking English, and the two married together.
But you do speak a little bit of Norwegian as well.
Well, minuscule.
I mean, us a little bit.
Well, talk for Martin. You know, I can say polite things like, you know, thank you for my meal and you're welcome and what's for breakfast. But other than that,
what's for breakfast in Norwegian?
Oh God, don't stop me. I was actually in the morning. I can't remember. Brain fog, menopause. I can barely remember how to say what's for breakfast in English this morning. And I definitely can't remember how to say it in Irish, though I did do Irish until my inter.
Did you?
Yeah, of course, like everyone else.
Well, I just thought of you, up until researching you, knowing that I was going to talk to you, I thought
I was
of you.
Privately taught, did you?
How did you do in your intercert in Irish? Questions I never thought I'd ask Mariella Frostrup.
I passed. I think that's...
Congratulations.
I think that's about it. Yeah, no, I struggled with Irish. And even that, I mean, I used to spend summers in Connemara, but oh my God, the doorbell's just rung. Can you believe it? And can I run and answer it?
Of course
sorry.
You can. We'll stand by.
Sorry. 2 seconds. Honestly, it's a very persistent...
Work away. Is it a package?
Hello. Yes, thank you. Sixth floor. Thank you.
It is a package. Either that or it's very early Deliveroo.
Dry cleaners.
Oh, very fancy.
I'm going to have to say thank you as well. This is a disaster.
Make sure you tip.
So I'm not bloody tipping. I pay them enough.
You have to tip.
dry cleaning is a fortune these days, and it's the guy who owns the dry cleaners who drops the dry cleaning. So do I really have to tip him?
Oh, well, not if you're getting the special. The guy who owns the dry cleaners brings me my
dry. It's not special service. It's a very small little place along the road.
An artisan dry cleaners.
Oh, God almighty. Yes, 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 I am. I lead an elevated, extremely privileged life with dry cleaners popping around every 2 minutes from artisan dry cleaners down the road.
And willing to walk all the way up to the elevated levels at the lofty heights of the sixth floor we hear as well. Very posh. You have a view.
This is my retirement apartment and has a lift. So he'll be using modern tech to arise to the sixth floor.
And while we're continuing on this theme, what were you getting dry cleaned? Is there an event coming up?
No, but I've got a terrible... This is going way down the road of mundanity. I've got a terrible moth problem. So before they come and spray for moths, you have to get... Hold on a sec, here is...
No, we're great.
You have to get all the... All your coats and everything dry cleaned.
I see. Every single coat. No tip, can you imagine? Comes all the way, six floors.
What?
Nothing.
Any of that. I was busy receiving my winter coat. I'm pretending that summer has begun. Though, frankly, stepping out today.
Now, hang on. Let's go back to your moth problem. How did you discover your moth problem?
Well, because all of my jumpers look like they're crocheted.
Did you know, and it's my understanding on this, that it isn't actually the moths, it's the moth larva that is the problem.
But exactly, and you can't see it.
Exactly, you don't know they're there because you think you're going to see moths, but you don't, you just see holes in jumpers.
But now my moth problem is so bad that not only do I actually have I started to see the larva, but when I lie in bed at night, I see moths flying past me and it's not conducive to a good night's sleep. I'm besieged. I don't think you understand the level of my problem. I have a scarf I've had for 30 years. And the other day I took it out of the cupboard and it literally looked like, some kind of extremely bad crochet.
But now, are you not just reinfecting your dry clean clothes by dry cleaning them and returning them to a moth-ridden environment?
I'm just trying to listen to the experts for once instead of pretending I am one. And the experts say, get all your coats dry cleaned, wash all your jumpers, put everything into plastic bags. Then they come and spray and you basically can't hoover for 2 weeks. So that's why I'm coming to Ireland. And then hopefully I'm going to return to a moth-free environment.
I love that Mariella Frostrup is attending the Ducky Book Festival because her house is being decontaminated from moth larvae and she has nowhere to live. Now, before we got to meet your dry cleaner, the owner of your artisan dry cleaners, to give him his full title.
But I think, can we just rephrase that and say the one man dry cleaning stop and drop shop down the road?
If you have managed to make it to the level of the global elites and the Illuminati, lean into it. Enjoy your rank and status, Mariella. Don't be in any way ashamed.
Perception is all, as they say.
We were talking about Wicklow and you phrased it by saying whenever I go back to Ireland. So do you still perceive Ireland slightly as home?
Very much. I mean, Ireland doesn't perceive me as Irish, but I perceive Ireland very much as home. It's a very dysfunctional relationship. If you do all your schooling somewhere, you know, I don't really remember pre about 5 years old. And that was when I moved to Dublin at first and then Wicklow. And then I left at 16 and, you know, I packed quite a lot in those 10 years. And you know what? I mean, there is something about Ireland as well that I think seduces everyone. So once you've spent any amount of time there, it always stays a little bit like home. But I think for me, it definitely, you know, it was all my formative years. You know, you go to school somewhere, that's your home.
So what caused you to leave?
It's suddenly when my dad died, when I was 15, and you know, I'd had it had been a difficult sort of early teens, I'd say. It just felt like suffocating for a moment, and I felt like I had to get out. And obviously, there's a grand tradition of the Irish leaving and returning, and I think I just thought I'd be part of that diaspora, and I'd be back soon. And it's just time's slightly flown.
But did you go to the UK on your own at 15?
No, I went with my best friend at the time, Mairead Houlihan, who lives in Kilkenny and who's a great artist. And yeah, she was the one, she was the mature one in the partnership. I was 16 and I think she was 18.
Oh, that's fine then. That's entirely responsible. No risk in that whatsoever.
And in fact, I have to be eternally grateful to her because she secured our accommodation, which was in a squat in Stoneleigh Street in West London, full of Irish people. So I did actually arrive, and I think it was a sunny May morning, and think, why have I bothered leaving?
Because someday I'll have an artisan dry cleaner who delivers direct. And did you, you then got a gig with Bob Geldof, is that right? You went into the music industry and ended up working on Band Aid and Live Aid.
Yeah, I didn't get a gig with Bob. I basically got a gig at a record company about 2 years after I got to London as an assistant publicist. And Bob was one of my first one of my first charges. And one of the first things he did was just take over my desk and start arranging Band Aid. So I was left wandering around the building homeless, but also attached to this fantastic project, which then obviously morphed into Live Aid and was an incredible thing to be involved in, particularly as a teenager having just arrived in the city.
With barely pass Irish to your name.
With barely pass Irish. Luckily, it wasn't the qualification they were looking for. So I managed to get away with that.
So that means that you were rubbing shoulders with literally the best of the best, the great and the good of global pop and rock music when you were still in your teens. That must have been fabulous.
Are you talking about? I started rubbing shoulders with the great and good in the music business at the age of 14 and a half, working at Keystone Studios in Harcourt Street. So by the time I was 18, I mean, none of it felt very impressive to me.
Wow.
I was a seasoned,
jaded,
you know, business, jaded executive. But, you know, that was never really been my... It's never really been my interest. Do you know what I mean? I also think that that's part of being brought up in Ireland. I don't think that you take fame very seriously.
Hang on a minute. You can't be saying there's Bananarama, there's Freddie Mercury, there's U2, there's Status Quo, and, well, maybe not Status Quo, but the rest of them. You can't be surrounded by all of them and not think, well, this is a bit special.
Well, considering that I worked with U2 on their first demos in that same studio, Keystone, in Harcourt Street, I'd have to say that, I wasn't, you know, particularly in awe of the brilliant Bono, but I've always, you know, loved them very much. No, honestly, unless Ireland's changed dramatically, I think that you're only as good as, you know, what you bring to the table. That's always been my experience of the Irish, and it's one of the things that I love the most, and it's one of the things that I actually miss, you know, in the UK, where we're kind of, you know, in the grip of everything from the class system to, you know, star worship to, you know, we're always looking outward for, you know, how to be our best selves, when actually I think that's very different in Ireland.
Oh yeah, we will ignore your fame and celebrity at a professional level.
I've never ever, I mean, the most celebrated I've ever felt returning to Ireland has been at the couple of big menopause conferences I've attended. And that was merely women grateful for the fact that I'd sort of dug menopause out of the trenches and exposed it to the light of day. So I think that my summation would be that the Irish still very much have their feet on the ground and recognise what's important in life. And frankly, fame and celebrity never really have been to me. And, you know, long may it stay that way.
So your experiences of the young Bono, you didn't see what they were going to become, is the sense that I get.
Well, I have to say that, I think that I would not be getting a job as what are they called, A&R man, anytime in the near future. I listened to U2's demos and I went to see them at McGonagall's, and I thought they were the loveliest four guys, and we had a laugh, and Bono still tells people that he was in love with me, but he says it in front of Ali, so it's okay. And I remind him that he was actually very much in love with her at the time. But I didn't think they had what it took.
Well, you know, a lot of people at the time would have agreed with you. It was a very small acorn that grew into the oak that we now take such pride in.
I'm telling you, if the footage exists of that first gig at McGonagall's, then I think that my point would be made. Though I have to say now, quite a number of their songs would be sort of soundtracks to my life and Desert Island discs. And in fact, I just saw him in Cannes because he just screened his rather brilliant...
Oh, you giant show-off. I mean, as if the dry cleaning wasn't enough, the I just saw Bono in Cannes.
Well, I was just about to tell you how brilliant his biopic is. I have to go there and work, don't I? And if your friend is there showing their film, you go and see it. And if you go and see it and you enjoy it, then you tell the rest of the world about it.
It's just envy, Mariella. It's just envy. I should have kept it to myself. I apologise. Was Cannes
fun? You should
fun?
Move to London. You'd fit in much better here.
Was it enjoyable and is the biopic good?
I think it's really quite brilliant. I think that, you know, he constantly manages to surprise you. You might think an hour and a half of Bono talking about his childhood, you know, and his experiences. You know, I know that, you know, he can be a bit Marmite, but I found it absolutely beautifully shot, kind of incredibly original, quite brave, actually, very brave, searingly honest, and really quite moving, actually.
And did it match with your remembrances of him back then?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I know most of us change quite a bit in the course of our lives, but I think in many ways, he was already sort of fully formed when I met him. He was already, you know, exactly. Is it, like, people think that fame makes Bono, you know, you know, be the biggest man in the room, despite not being the biggest man in the room. But he's always been like that, and he's always been, you know, absolutely full. The thing I love about him is that he's full of life and optimism and determination. And he does really want to change the world. And he has done since he was, 17 years old, really. You know, first maybe his own world and then the wider world. And, you know, I know he gets a lot of flack, but I really respect it. And I also really respect the fact that, you know, like, we've been friends for 490 years. And I think people that keep their old friends close actually, you know, are really quite special as well.
There's obviously, as we established earlier on, two reasons that you're coming to Ireland this time. One being the Docky Book Festival, the other being the extermination of your unwanted pestilence that's currently eating your wardrobe. I hope the other one goes well, but that's up to you and whoever you get the exterminators to, whatever exterminators you get. To the first of those, the Docky Book Festival, have you done it before and what are you looking forward to in doing it this time?
I have done it before. In fact, I mounted a rival event to the Tom Hanks. in the Tom Hanks in person, you know, I think that was that a couple of years ago. I think
it was,
he went to Dorky. I think this might be actually my third trip, but that was particularly memorable because I managed to sell out my event, despite the fact that obviously Tom Hanks was a major draw. And it was a discussion amongst menopausal women about cracking the menopause. So, extremely proud of that and happy to kind of, you know, give him a run for his money anytime.
Well, I believe you're huge in the menopause community.
I am huge in the menopause community. No, I am actually the British government's current menopause employment ambassador. But that's kind of the pinnacle so far of my menopause campaigning. Aside from publishing Cracking the Menopause, and now a cookbook. Fantastic diet. I'm just looking at it now. Fantastic. Cookbook for women in midlife and beyond. But actually, I say it's for women. It's not really. I got my husband to cook some of the recipes at the weekend and he was extremely dubious. He said, I don't want to catch menopause. And I said, for a start, it's not catching, as you well know. And he said, frankly, I don't want to go anywhere near it. And I said, I don't think by having a harmonious cannellini bean one pot and a spinach and lentil dal, you'll be catching menopause anytime soon. So he reluctantly made it and declared it delicious. In fact, I'm going to post the video today because I think that the more, you know, people we can get eating well and healthily in this world. I went to, I won't name the supermarket the other day, and thought, what's the point of all this campaigning about ready meals and not wrapping things in plastic and all of us wandering around with canvas bags so we don't use plastic ones when everything on the shelves are ready meals and everything is wrapped in plastic. So the only mug not carrying plastic is the shopper leaving the supermarket trying desperately to like stuff things in your pocket because you've forgotten to bring a carrier bag. Anyway, I've digressed, haven't I? I love going to Dorky. It's definitely one of my favourite book festivals. It's got a fantastic atmosphere. There's always fascinating people in the green room. I'm actually, look, don't tell anyone else this, but I'm actually there to stalk Colin McCann. But I don't want him to know. I just want to act casual about it because I know you think I should be impressed by the long, long line of you know, musicians that I've encountered over the years. But actually, it's Colin McCann that's my real heartthrob. And I've just read Twist, and it's such a great book.
Well, it's a delight to know that if the music industry was able to jade you after only 4 years between the ages of 14 and 14 or 18, that you haven't lost your interest in literature despite being exposed for longer. Can I congratulate you on bringing that tangent back to the Dorky Book Festival? I wasn't sure you were going to pull it off. It was masterful.
Thank you very much. Listen, I am a very much diagnosed ADHD character and the brain does tend to go off on a lot of different tangents, but I do try and rein it in, a lifetime of trying to do so.
I am very conscious that you have dry cleaning to inspect, so I won't hold you any longer. Mariella, thank you so much and best of luck at the Dorky Book Festival. It is on 12th through 15th of June.
Thanks. Great to talk to you, Anton.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.